This is Dori Smith for Regime Change Radio, a half-hour program about the importance of voting to bring about regime change in America. Millions of people protested the war in Iraq last year, and again in over 130 U.S. cities. People came out to vigil February 15th, according to Mike Zmolik of endthewar.org. Americans were joined by counterparts in six cities in the U.K., several cities in Canada, and cities in Bangladesh, Ireland, Italy, Portugal, Switzerland, and Sweden. These events were part of a global vigil for peace called for by the National Grassroots Peace Network in the U.S. You can learn more about their efforts by logging on to endthewar.org. Throughout the past year, the peace movement gathered momentum and forced the mainstream press into a discussion about missing weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Unfortunately, the Bush administration and Attorney General John Ashcroft have responded to falling public opinion polls by using the national security apparatus set up after 9/11 to investigate and intimidate the peace activists. Marjorie Cohn, Executive Vice President of the National Lawyers Guild, joins us today to describe the tactics that were used against peace activists in Iowa in early February of 2004 when the government tried to use subpoenas and secret courts to investigate peace workers. The National Lawyers Guild is an association dedicated to the need for basic change in the structure of the U.S. political and economic system. The Guild unites lawyers, law students, and legal workers as an effective political and social force in the service of the people. If you are planning to attend a demonstration and would like to touch base with the National Lawyers Guild for information, you can log on to their website at www.nlg.org. A Polk County, Iowa deputy sheriff working with the FBI's Joint Counterterrorism Task Force subpoenaed the peace workers, along with staff of Drake University and the National Lawyers Guild itself. I asked Marjorie Cohn what Americans had to fear from the National Lawyers Guild.
Absolutely nothing. The National Lawyers Guild started in 1937 because the American Bar Association would not allow blacks and Jews. So it started as an alternative bar association. And for the past 67 years, National Lawyers Guild lawyers and law students, legal workers, have helped people and defended them when they have been attacked for exercising their constitutional rights, civil rights protesters, anti-war activists. No, the government has nothing to fear from the National Lawyers Guild at all. During the J. Edgar Hoover days, he was, of course, the head of the FBI, and the 50s with McCarthyism and the Red Scare, the government used the grand jury to harass and intimidate people who spoke out against the government. So typically, people would be subpoenaed to give information before a secret grand jury, and when they took the Fifth Amendment, the prosecution would say, okay, we will give you immunity from prosecution, but you have to tell us everything you know about who attended meetings and who spoke out and who were officers and what kind of files they had. And if the person refused to answer the questions in front of the grand jury, that person would be incarcerated for the life of the grand jury, which is typically 18 months. So it was an intimidation tactic to intimidate people from dissenting against the government's policies. And that's what's happening again now as Bush is facing re-election, is on the defensive. The National Lawyers Guild was doing training in nonviolent civil disobedience at a conference at Drake University the day before a peaceful protest at the Iowa Air National Guard. And stemming from that November meeting, the subpoenas were issued and requested files on members of the National Lawyers Guild and the officers of the National Lawyers Guild and the agenda of the meeting and what people had discussed. And this is all protected First Amendment activity. So it's a harassment technique. It's an indication that the government will go after people if they get together and protest and dissent. But The thing that's really significant is that when the National Lawyers Guild went into court saying you're violating our First Amendment rights to quash the they went in to quash the subpoenas, and people all over the country were up in arms about this violation of the First Amendment, the government backed down in Iowa and withdrew the subpoenas, and that is a real victory.
Doesn't it also suggest that they really didn't have a case for this inquiry, these subpoenas, doing anything for true American security?
Absolutely. And interestingly, the subpoenas were served by a Polk County deputy sheriff who works with the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force. But the U.S. Attorney's Office, when they withdrew the subpoenas, they said that the sole intent of these subpoenas was to gather information about a solitary demonstrator who allegedly scaled a fence on federal property the day after the meeting. But it just doesn't add up. Why, then, does the government issue five subpoenas calling for information about peaceful activists and the National Lawyers Guild? The four activists who were also subpoenaed were from the Catholic Peace Ministry, the Iowa Peace Network, and the Catholic Worker House. And Iowa Senator Tom Harkin got it right when he said, "I don't like the smell of it. It reminds me too much of Vietnam when war protesters were rounded up, when grand juries were convened to investigate people who were protesting the war."
Now, can you establish, do you think, at this point in our history with the Bush administration, that the majority of these kinds of inquiries and investigations are directed at oppositional?
I think it's clear that they are. They're fishing expeditions, they're witch hunts. A federal judge, in response to a request from the U.S. attorney, slapped a gag order on the Drake employees so that the government was intending to conduct this investigation in secrecy. And John Ashcroft has been traveling the country in his roadshow to try to drum up support for the Patriot Act, which has come under fire from hundreds of different governmental entities, and also to drum up support for this Patriot 2, which is even worse than Patriot 1. The Patriot Act lowers standards for government surveillance and creates a crime of domestic terrorism. And you can bet that Ashcroft is going to target other organizations who criticize government policies and accuse them of being domestic terrorists.
Now, what happens if no one is ever investigated who is literally on the Republican conservative front doing the same kinds of organizing?
Republicans really are not the target of Ashcroft's campaign, and understandably so, because Ashcroft, of course, is coming from the Republican Party. Very alarming development that has taken place is that John Ashcroft has now subpoenaed, I believe, six hospitals across the country to turn over confidential records on women who have undergone abortion. And this is New York Times came out today with a scathing editorial against that. So it's not just anti-war protesters they're going against. They're also pandering to the right-wing Christian anti-abortion people by subpoenaing records on women who have had certain kinds of abortions. So there's a widespread campaign here under the guise of the war on terrorism to go after constitutionally protected activity. And, of course, there's the travesty that's going on in Guantanamo, where 650 men with no criminal charges against them have been held basically in cages for 2 years with no right to counsel and no access to the courts to challenge their confinement. Now, the Supreme Court will decide whether federal courts have jurisdiction to hear these cases, but there have been reports by people who have been released from Guantanamo about torture, about firing rubber bullets at them, about making them kneel cruciform in the sun. I guess on Bush's radio address, he talked again about weapons of mass destruction. It's like a mantra, just ignoring the fact that none were found in Iraq. And the biggest weapons of mass destruction are in the hands of the United States government. We have the biggest nuclear arsenal in the world. And yet Bush is talking about going after other countries who may be developing nuclear arsenals because they're afraid of us. There are a lot of very alarming things going on in this country, not the least of which is that our soldiers are continuing to die on a daily basis in Iraq, where we have no business at all.
Marjorie, go over the history of the National Lawyers Guild and tell us how it its history applies to what's happened more recently.
Well, the National Lawyers Guild is headquartered in New York. It has 6,000 members nationwide, and the guild has fought illegal government activity, defending anti-war protesters and civil rights activists for 67 years. But this is not the first time that the National Lawyers Guild's support of activism has made it a government target. In the 1950s, Guild members were subpoenaed before the House Un-American Activities Committee for defending people accused of associating with communists during the McCarthy era. And years later, the Guild filed a lawsuit against the FBI for unlawful surveillance over several decades, and the several thousand pages of discovery that the Guild received pursuant to that lawsuit revealed that the FBI had put agents in Guild meetings, had wiretapped lawyers' offices and homes, and had built dossiers or files on those perceived as critical of government policies. And in 1989, the FBI finally admitted that it had tried to disrupt the Guild, even though it had no proof that the Guild was a subversive organization.
I want to talk to you about the politics of this matter. How does this work politically, that let's say one group is being pressured in a community, they're organizing for peace and against the war in Iraq?
You know, people have asked, why Iowa? Why is Ashcroft interested in anti-war protests in Iowa? And it's important to keep in mind that Bush narrowly lost the state of Iowa to Al Gore in the 2000 election. I think it was 48% to 49%, and I think it was a little more than 4,000 votes that separated the two, a very narrow margin. So I think that Bush would like to intimidate Democrats and shore up his Republican base in Iowa, and also send a message that, a very strong message, which many Republicans would like, which is that dissent will not be tolerated, especially if it's dissent against policies that they hold dear. So I think that's why we saw this in Iowa. But I have to say that it's been happening in other parts of the country as well. In Colorado, in March, there was a sit-in at the Buckley Air National Guard base in the middle of March. And the day before, the Colorado Coalition Against the War in Iraq had a nonviolent training session, and the government, through an undercover officer, infiltrated that group. There have been nonviolent anti-war groups infiltrated in Fresno, California, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Albuquerque, New Mexico. And in New York, last spring, people were arrested at anti-war demonstrations and were extensively questioned about their political associations, and their answers were put into databases. So this looks like a much more widespread campaign than we realize. We don't hear it. It's not on the radar screen. The Department of Justice and through the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force is just quietly harassing and intimidating and infiltrating groups of people who are exercising their lawful First Amendment rights of free association and free expression.
Talk about this a little bit as it relates to the law with regards to the Homeland Security Act and the Patriot Act in general, Patriot Acts 1 and 2.
Well, you know, let me just go back to the early 70s when a congressional committee, which was chaired by Senator Frank Church, investigated abuses such as the J. Edgar Hoover's surveillance of the Guild and other organizations through the 50s, 60s, and 70s that were peace organizations, solidarity organizations with the people in El Salvador, et cetera. And they investigated the program that J. Edgar Hoover had called COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program. And the Church Committee was very outraged by this and enacted much tighter regulations limiting what the FBI could do so as not to impair people's rights of freedom of speech and First Amendment rights. Well, through the Patriot Act and through subsequent directives that John Ashcroft has handed down, he has basically eviscerated these regulations that came about as a result of the Church Committee. And the Patriot Act, parts of the Patriot Act are going to be challenged as unconstitutional, and I think we will see courts striking down parts of the Patriot Act that allow surveillance with very minimal oversight by the courts in violation of the Fourth Amendment, and that intimidate people who are lawfully engaged in freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press in violation of the First Amendment. But certainly, John Ashcroft is trying his level best to wipe away all of these restrictions that came about precisely in response to government overreaching and abuse in the past, very similar to what we're seeing today.
And about the Patriot Act, and especially Patriot Act II, who gets to vote on these acts in general? I mean, does the vote ever come down to the states, or is it supposed to be voted on by states?
No, it's a federal law, so Congress enacts the law. Congress enacted the Patriot Act 1 month, maybe 6 weeks, after September 11th. And it's something like 348 pages. Most of the senators never read it before they were basically railroaded by John Ashcroft after September 11th into passing this very repressive legislation. And the day after the vote on the Patriot Act, many Senate aides called organizations such as the ACLU and said, "What did we just pass?" They didn't know, but you know, there was a lot of guilt tripping and real fear that went on in Congress and went on until some people started running for president. Finally, they're criticizing the government's policies. But there's been such widespread opposition recently to the Patriot Act that hundreds of governmental entities, states, city governments have actually come out in favor of repealing the Patriot Act. Patriot 2 was leaked. It's not really called Patriot 2, but that's what, or Son of Patriot, that's kind of the nickname. The government denied that it was in the works, and yet it came out in the open, and there's been a lot of opposition to it, which is why it hasn't been seriously considered by Congress yet. But Patriot 2 actually allows the government to revoke people's citizenship for associating with groups that the government doesn't like. It's very, very frightening.
What kinds of things can we do to encourage people all over America to continue to work on elections and discuss and debate issues and get together to protest the war and continue doing what they would have done before any of these draconian laws were passed?
Well, I think the experience that we had in Iowa should serve as a lesson to people that when people stand up to the government and say, "We are not going to allow you to take away our civil liberties and destroy our constitutional rights and intimidate and harass us try to keep us from exercising our lawful right to dissent," which, of course, is essential in a democracy, that in fact the government will back down. The government does respond to pressure, and so people should not be intimidated. People should join together and protest the war and protest other cutbacks on civil liberties. These new subpoenas of women who have had abortions is very alarming. The New York Times used some very, very strong language in its editorial. The other thing that people should do is Congress responds to pressure, and to write senators and congresspeople, email them, write letters to the editor, op-eds, and speak out about the outrage that people feel about what the Bush administration is doing. And then, of course, the other thing is to make sure that Bush is not elected in November. Not only will there be no accountability if he's elected in November, and he won't even be looking over his shoulder and continue and expand upon in continuing and really amplifying on these very repressive policies, but I think it's very, very likely that the draft will come back. There was something on the Department of Defense website asking for volunteers for the draft boards. We have a very, very small military, and with Bush's so-called preemptive wars that he's planning around the world, if you read From and Pearl's book, An End to Evil, you'll see what the plans are. expanding the axis of evil and making sure that no one challenges our superiority in the world. He doesn't have enough soldiers to do that. He doesn't have enough military personnel. And so I think it's important for young people, for college kids, to understand that it's really, really important that they register to vote and that they vote in November, and that whoever is the Democratic candidate, it looks like it will probably be John Kerry, has to be supported, because the future of our country is at stake here in a way that it never has been before. I have friends who are in their 80s who were around during the McCarthy period, who went through horrible intimidation, and they say that that was nothing compared to what's happening now. So I think that people really have to be cognizant of the urgency of getting together and really not being afraid to speak out against these policies, because especially since this is an election year, they're going to have a lot of support, at least among the Democrats who are trying to unseat Bush, for their positions.
Between now and the end of March, there will be a lot of demonstrations going on around the world because it's been now 1 year since the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq. What kinds of advice do you have for people preparing to get out in the streets and protest the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, U.S. foreign policy in general? What kinds of things might they need to know?
Well, I believe March 20th is the day there's going to be a nationwide and worldwide protest against against the war and the other things that you mentioned. And I know that people are already planning for that. I am sure that there is training going on in nonviolence, and people are organizing to have legal observers. One of the things that the National Lawyers Guild does and has done for years, and certainly did during the anti-war protests last spring before the Iraq War started, was to do training of legal observers to document abuses by the police during the demonstrations. And the other thing that the National Lawyers Guild does is what is called mass defense, so that if people are arrested during demonstrations, which they frequently are for failing to disperse or unlawful assembly, misdemeanor trespass, things like that, that there is an organized legal network to defend them and to handle their cases in the courts. So I would suggest that if people are planning to demonstrate, that they get in touch with their local representatives from the National Lawyers Guild to make sure that all of their rights are protected.
Now, they can log on to the National Lawyers Guild website?
Yes, and it's www.nlg.org.
Finally, Marjorie, do you think that the revelations that the White House faked weapons reports and used the attacks on 9/11 to generate support for the war in Iraq will be this administration's undoing in the end? Do you think that things will get that far?
You know, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think I have to say that the Democrats seem to be on a roll right now. They have put the Bush administration on the defensive, and certainly the Bush administration is scrambling to make it look like they're not hiding anything. Bush's war record His military service record is, of course, been in the headlines for several days, and he continually releases documents, and none of them prove that, in fact, he did fulfill his guard duties. With the 9/11, he has been, he's certainly been stymieing that committee, and now he finally says he's going to testify. I think one of the interesting things is that in response to public pressure, he set up a commission, which he calls an independent commission, but he appointed all of the people who will serve on that commission, to investigate the weapons of mass destruction issue in Iraq, and yet he said that that committee will not report back to him until over a year from now, which is March. Now, of course, that doesn't that flies in the face. He says he's a patient man, but of course, when the UN weapons inspectors were in Iraq saying, "Give us more time," he wasn't patient in those days. And so, I really think that the more the media really draws attention to these, what I think in many instances are lies that have been perpetrated by the administration to justify what they've done in Iraq and elsewhere, that there's going to be outrage across the country. I mean, the fact that Democrats now are really united in an almost unprecedented way, and most of the exit polls show that in the primaries and the caucuses show that people are concerned with getting rid of George Bush. I thought it was interesting when Bush was on Meet the Press. He was not asked about the allegations of Paul O'Neill, which came out in the Susskind book, saying that, in fact, the decision to go to Iraq was made about 10 days after the inauguration and really did not have anything to do with weapons of mass destruction. And, of course, that was confirmed by Paul Wolfowitz himself in Vanity Fair, who said that the weapons of mass destruction was just a bureaucratic excuse they could all agree on. But he probably had told Tim Russert that he wouldn't answer questions about the O'Neill allegations because they didn't come up. But those are very damning allegations, and those indicate serious misrepresentations on the part of the government. And there is a lot in the newspapers, on television, on the internet that is confirming that. And there are also right-wing attempts to paint Kerry with the anti-war brush, that he was being unpatriotic after the Vietnam War, after he came back a decorated war hero who had been wounded in Vietnam. And there was a photograph in today's New York Times that had been doctored, which is easy to do with a digital photograph. It was a picture of John Kerry waiting to speak at a rally by himself, and then the next picture, somebody had superimposed Jane Fonda next to him at a microphone to doctor the picture, to link him up with Jane Fonda, who was criticized for coming out against the war in Vietnam, which, of course, the majority of American people ultimately came to understand was an unjust war.
Now, speaking of dirty tricks, let me just remind listeners of the incident where Roger Stone, the longtime Republican dirty tricks operative who helped to shut down the Miami-Dade County vote recount in the last presidential election, wound up supporting Al Sharpton and letting Al Sharpton use his credit card to help make his campaign bigger and so that he could get into the debates. And does this strike you as the kind of thing, the kind of dirty tricks effort that we're going to be seeing throughout the next election? And if so, again, who should we contact so that our rights are better supported and so that we know, are our candidates, in fact, who they say they are?
Yeah, I think that we're going to see incredible dirty tricks as the campaign gets underway. Bush has something like $200 million, which is more than any candidate has ever raised, and that can buy a lot of media time and do a lot of manipulating of the media. And I'm just wondering what they have up their sleeve, what they're planning, kind of dramatic event they're planning shortly before the election. But I think that people have to be vigilant, people have to be critical, and again, keep in touch with your elected representatives. And, you know, it's not hard to get a letter to the editor in the newspaper. If you read an article and you are really moved by it, you respond to that article in a short letter to the editor, and you can get that in your newspaper. Lots of people do, and I think that that's really important because they read that. The people running for office, the people in government, and the people in Congress do read the newspapers, and they read the editorial pages and the letters to the editor, and I think it's very important that people exercise their rights to express themselves in a way that also reaches out to other people as well and tries to build a concerted effort to really protect our democracy against probably the most vicious assault on it that we've ever seen in this country.
Marjorie Cohn is the executive vice president of the National Lawyers Guild, headquartered in New York with 6,000 members nationwide. The Guild has fought illegal government activity, defending anti-war protesters and civil rights activists for 67 years. She is a frequent contributor to Jurist. Marjorie, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Dory.
If you would like further information on the work of Marjorie Cohn and others at the National Lawyers Guild, you can write to them in their New York offices at 143 Madison Avenue, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10016. Their phone number is area code 212-679-5100. And you can find them online at www.nlg.org. For Regime Change Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program was produced in the studios of listener-supported WHUS Stores, Radio for the People. For further information on this program, write to me, Dori Smith, at rcrradio@aol.com. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or the University of Connecticut.